All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I was a chief warrant officer, second class, I guess you would call it, helicopter pilot in Vietnam in 1969. And we welcome you today to Veterans Radio. And we've got two great guests. I'm really excited for you to listen to both of these stories. One is about a Vietnamese pilot who escaped from Vietnam in 1975 with his family. And he's got a wonderful story. I think that it's a very compelling story as well, that I think you're going to enjoy about actually what we really did accomplish when we were in Vietnam, and I think that's really important. And then in the second half of the program, we've got a veteran musician, a troubadour. His name is Dave Bray. He's an Army, Navy veteran. And last week on our program, we went out with his a cappella version of the national anthem, and we got many responses wanting to know who he was. So Dave is going to be on our program during the second half of our program. I want to thank everybody for that supports Veterans Radio. Especially, I want to mention Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans is a law firm that only fights for veterans' rights. They concentrate strictly on veterans' disability claims, and for your help, you can give them a call, and they have a toll-free 800 number. That is 800-693-4800. 800-693-4800. That is Legal Help for Veterans. We've been able to refer a lot of people to that law firm, and they've been able to help out a lot of people. So I would encourage you to contact them if you have any question, if you're having issues with your disability claim. The second sponsor who's been with us for quite a while now is American House Westland Vinoy. And this is a, they offer affordable senior living options for seniors age 55 and over. They have special rooms, not specially designed rooms really, but special rooms available for veterans. And if you need housing, or you know some veteran that is homeless right now, they have pretty much told us that they can get them in there if they meet all of the qualifications and all the rules and regulations and so forth. But they do have special rooms available for them. And their number is 734-961-4782. 734-961-4782. That is American House Westland Vinoy. It's located in Westland, Michigan. Go check it out. We're going to be doing a tour ourselves in the next couple of weeks, and we'll report back then. So check out American House and Legal Help for Veterans. All right. So let me set this up just a little bit. Our guest is, and he's kind of changed the order of his name. It's Kim Pham, and he goes by that today. He was a lieutenant in the South Vietnamese Air Force, pilot in April of 1975 when he fled the country with his family in tow. What we're going to be talking about is how he managed to get a hold of a C-130 and also how he was able to figure out how to get out of the country. So joining us on Veterans Radio right now is Mr. Pham. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Yeah, thank you for letting me have my voice in your radio.
Well, thank you for agreeing to share this story. I have to tell our audience, it's kind of a roundabout way that we found out about Mr. Pham. His son, Phil, found one of our Vietnam Veterans of America 310 brochures in a local restaurant, and he ended up contacting our organization, and then he came out and he told the story, and then you were up in Howell, Michigan, this last summer when the Wall of Honor went through there and told your story.
Yes.
And so I've been trying to hook up with Mr. Pham for quite a while, and we finally came up with a date. So let's go back, if you can, to 1975, and tell me what was going on in Vietnam at that time.
Well, I've flown several missions to flown refugee from the second largest bay in Da Nang to Saigon, and I've flown several more missions from the Central Island, carry refugee from that airport to the Nha Trang Air Force Base is another large base there, And I saw the chaos when people jumped to my airplane and secured the seat and all the chaos and our control, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think this trend will happen very quickly to Saigon, where my home base is. And if that happened, what can I do to take my family out to safety? Because I know my family cannot fighting with all the soldier or the family to get in the airplane, just like I saw in Da Nang or Pleiku or Nha Trang, you know. So I think the best way is I have to secure the flight, take my family out to safety, rather than wait until thing happened to Saigon and get out of it too late.
Right. Well, it in reading your story, you were talking about the idea that the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong were starting to just overrun most of the bases in the northern part of the country, and they were heading south, seemed like on a daily basis, getting closer and closer to Saigon.
Yeah.
And and you mentioned that you were already seeing refugees trying to get out of the northern part of the country, and it was, as you mentioned, it was just chaos. And so you were trying to figure out how to get them out. So tell us about that. How were you going to get your family out?
I was lucky, you know. I was Christian. I believe God have the way to help me out of that situation when I think impossible. Because in my squadron, I heard all the high-ranking already talk to each other how if they get family out, if something happened in Saigon, you know. And I look at myself, hey, this is only lieutenant. How can I take my family out? How I compete with all the high ranking in my squadron? So I talked to one of my friend in my sister's squadron, and we know of a long time. And I tell him that, hey, we have to do something, because if this happened, I don't think we can get out here safely. So can you agree to do this with me? And because I am the one who start this. Mm-hmm. And even here, high ranking than me, but he thought, well, whatever your idea, I go along with, and I will keep the secret, you know. And then on the April 3rd of 1975, with Thursday, I was in reserve, number two reserve. And at that time, all the aircraft is, we have only one base, Air Force Base left at Phang Rang Air Force Base. It's about 20-minute flight in the northeast of Saigon.
Right. Okay, I'm familiar with Phang Rang. I've been there.
Yeah, yes. And and most of the mission is carry bomb and drop into the communist section that where they can find.
Mm-hmm.
But there, two mission. One for go to Phang Rang, and they carry supply like dry rice or ration, food ration to Phang Rang, and carry the member of the military from Phang back to Saigon. That's what they do.
You were. Excuse me for interrupting. I wanted to let our audience know that the fuel, because of their rumors about, you know, the country falling, that your fuel was being rationed to you.
That. I want to mention that later, but you asked. Because the flight from, you know, the flight for bombing mission is around 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
The flight to Phang Rang is 21 minutes. So all the aircraft have the order to have the enough fuel to complete the mission, very short mission, and go home, and plus a little reserve, like 10-minute reserve, something, and very strictly on the fuel, because the headquarters know some crazy pilot will steal the aircraft and get out of the country in this time of, you know, in this period of time.
Right.
And they already prevent by doing that. But in my case, it's totally different. You know, it's different. I was so lucky. So people for the last 43 years since I've been here, most people just tell me, oh, Kim was stealing the airplane, steal the airplane. And I say, no, I didn't steal any airplane. I had for last time when I was in Detroit, I said, I borrowed it.
You borrowed the airplane.
Because, okay, the aircraft part in the ramp. Mm-hmm. You secret walk in and sprang the engine and back up and took off. You steal the airplane, right?
No.
Nike or whatever. But in my case, not. Friend of mine get the mission, go to Fang Rang to drop the supply and carry another 92 passenger back to Saigon. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, not his mission. His friend mission. His friend ordered to fly twice that day. And when his friend came home and he said, well, why we have so many pilots, why they asked me to fly twice? You know, so a friend of mine said, why don't you let me fly your mission?
Oh, okay.
Okay, go ahead. So, because that happened in my sister's squadron, not in my squadron. All right? And then friend of mine said, hey, Kim, I have the mission. We have to act fast. Then I say, okay. Then, because I already told my family, be ready, I can leave the country anytime, right? So by some instinct, and that day I told my family all gathering to my house. I stay with my in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a large mansion, so people can be in there, 50 people, plenty of room for them to stay, you know? And by some instinct, I stand that I can get out of country that day.
Mm.
But somehow the mission come up. Now, how I can fly the mission is not my mission, because that belonged to the sister squadron. We have two C-130 squadron, and my sister squadron 433rd, and I was 435th squadron. Somehow the aircraft goes second flight to Fang Rang is have the hydraulic problem. So his squadron called to my squadron and borrow one good aircraft of my squadron to complete the mission.
Oh, okay.
Now, from the time they transfer all the 20,000 power up dry right from the aircraft part different area to this aircraft in my squadron, it takes maybe half hour, 45 minutes. So when I heard that they going to borrow one of the aircraft in my squadron, I jumped direct to that aircraft. And the first thing I do is nobody there yet except me. I flip the master switch and check the fuel. Oh. And I saw fuel was full.
Oh.
It's full. And the minute I turn around, the corporal who in charge of the fuel, his face is pale. He looked at me, and he told me that, Lieutenant, please forgive me. Don't report this, because they put me in jail for 10 days. Because I take the smoke break, I forgot to turn off the fuel.
Oh.
So he said, can you give me some time? I defuel. I say, no defuel. And I point his finger to his face, say, never do it again. Remember? Get out of my face. You know? But in my heart was so joy. And then all the cargo is loaded to my airplane. And then I was in the cockpit at that time. So the co-pilot show up. And he is my classmate. And say, hey, only 21 minute fly back and forth. I'm free now. Can you let me fly your mission and you go home, do whatever you want? And next thing he have a date to something, he say, oh, okay, you take it. And then a friend of mine show up, and here is a situation. I already called my family. I said, I have the aircraft. I get out of the country today. Now, you know, the remote airport that my brother already know who, where is that. So I told him to lead my family from Saigon to that airport. It's only 16 miles something, straight line. Mm-hmm. But for the car, the travel maybe 25 miles in a remote, you know, road. So it takes them for a long time to get there. So I tell them to go ahead and leave the house right now and met me at the remote airport. Longton is the name of hamlet there.
Yeah, Longton.
I picked up Longton, because I landed there a couple of times during my training. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Army owned that, 5,000 foot runway when 1973, when the withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
All the building discard, but the runway still intact and still good, very good shape. Then I pick up that one and say, because nobody pay attention much about that airfield, because so many hundred airfield in around Vietnam at that time. But Longton is the closest I can pick it up. So my family leaving, and I am at the airport at 3 o'clock, and say, well, the minute if we crank the engine, we taxi out, we take up, take us maybe 10 minutes to get there, and then my family never show up there because they still on the road. So what they do? So I tried to delay because at that time the flight engineer didn't show up yet. So I secretly go down to the bottom of the table, and I know this is the circuit breaker that you pull out. It's not the aircraft not built pop up when you overload, but this is man, you pull out for purpose of maintenance only.
Oh, okay.
So that circuit breaker is belong to the APU. It's the unit, actually unit power to produce the power aircraft and air to crank the engine.
Mm-hmm.
So I pull that one because that aircraft, when you pull that aircraft, only maintenance people know. General pilot or flight engineer never know. So he came the aircraft and pre-checked the aircraft, and then he cranked the APU. APU not start.
Oh,
when
okay.
APU not start, you then have no electricity for aircraft. You have no air to start the engine.
Mm-hmm.
So he opened the book and looked and searched, say why he do that routinely. How come today he start the APU not starting? So he do all the tracking until he find out one of circuit breaker on the bottom, it pop. He just say, hey, all the mechanic, why don't he crazy? Why don't he, after he fix, why don't he pull it back in? Let me have a 20 minute to search, and now I find out this is, they forgot to push this in after the maintenance aircraft. You know, I heard he say that. And then a friend of mine show up, the two load master and the engineer show up, and we have the complete free flight, and we start crank the engine and push it and back up. But why I was there, I would sit at the table of the navigator. I key in the waypoint where I will be flying, because we not fly inland. We have to fly to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I already draw the chart the night before at home. I draw the chart and fix and do all the fixed point in the ocean to let the aircraft will be fly to that waypoint.
Okay, so you already had a plan on where you were going to fly to once you got everybody on board.
Yes, I programmed that on the navigator system.
Mm-hmm.
And the programming, they don't teach to the pilot.
Oh, okay. Only the navigator, right?
They teach only to navigate it. But I learned because during my second training on the C-130 by American pilot, and they trained the pilot and navigator in same flight.
Mm-hmm.
When they train the captain, I am co-pilot. I stand in the back seat and observe. And at meantime, the American instructor also teach the navigator how to use the Doppler system on C-130.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, I look my eye to the cockpit for the pilot. I look at the navigator system and learn how to do it. And that's how I learn. And then I remember how they programmed the waypoint to fly long distance. Because that training, it take me a 7-hour flight from Saigon to Da Nang. Only take an hour and 25 minutes. And this time, because they fly to the ocean, to the east, toward mm-hmm. Philippines, and then go north, and then turn back to Da Nang. It takes 7 hours for trained navigator. And I was mm-hmm. learned from there. And that's why I know how to program that Doppler. But I guarantee you, all the pilot in my squadron don't know how to do it. You know?
All right, I gotta stop you here for a second. We are talking with Kim Pham, who has escaped from South Vietnam with his family in 1975, and we're going to go through the news this time. We're not going to take a break for the news, but I want to get to the idea. Okay, so you've gone to Long Thanh, which I've been to Long Thanh, and tell us about how you got your family on and finally got out.
You know, all that's going on, and we took off, and we get to Long Thanh Airport. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to Long Thanh Airport, I didn't see nobody show up.
Uh-oh.
So I told my friend that, why don't you make it one more turn? So the second turn around, I saw five little car from the rural road there, approaching airport, and I told my friend that go ahead and land it. So I already told my brother, say, look, C-130 is very noisy. So you took care of the family. You tell them when you saw my aircraft upload, mm-hmm. run toward the aircraft, okay? The four engines still running. Now, after my friend landing to the end of the runway, we make a 180.
Mm-hmm.
And I key the microphone to the loadmaster, and I ask him, can you upload all the cargo for me? He didn't ask me. Hey, Kim, this is supposed to go to Fangrang Airport, not here. Why you ask me to upload here? He mm-hmm. he didn't ask me this question. He just opened the door, and he say, the safety lock and lock, go ahead to move forward. And when we move forward, all the cargo just get off the aircraft and sit on the ground. All right?
Okay.
At that time, all my family just run toward the aircraft. Now, during that happened, there was the Jeep with four soldiers with M9. 79, is that the grenade launcher?
Oh, the grenade launcher, yes, okay.
Yes.
M79.
I went toward in my left side of the aircraft, and the grenade launcher was pointing to the aircraft. I don't think he intend to threat us or shoot at us, but I think the way the soldier hold the grenade launcher that just happened to be facing to the aircraft, all right? Mm-hmm. And that soldier would stop about 20 yards to the left side of the and the grass, because we on the runway, four engines still running. And here's the situation. After the cargo loading, I key the mic. I am the one who's talking.
Mm-hmm.
The major who flying the aircraft, he say nothing. Everything is on, I am the, in charge for do everything. So I key the mic. I say, gentlemen, I'm sorry, this aircraft will not go back to Saigon anymore. And I didn't know, tell them where to go. I just say, this aircraft will not go back to Saigon anymore. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go with us, stay. If you don't want it, please leave. Now, I saw the flight engineer sit beside me. He unplugged his headset. He walked out. And then for a moment, he come back and he plugged the headset back and he said, I go with you. At that time, I take off on my seat and go back to the rear aircraft to see how the loading. And then I saw all my people already on the airplane and I don't know how many. All right. I saw the main loadmaster talking to one of the soldiers in the Jeep over there. I don't know what he's talking about, or they may ask him why that aircraft part healed in here that I don't know. I just saw he talking. He unplugged headset and talked. But the second flight engineer, second loadmaster was standing by the ramp. By the end, the ramp looked at his, because the second loadmaster is the first time on C-130 for training to be loadmaster on C-130. He already loadmaster for different aircraft, but today is his first time on C-130 for training. And the master sergeant is the instructor, already unplugged the headset and run away from the aircraft because he don't want to go with me.
Mm-hmm.
So he took off. And the second loadmaster stand by the end of the ramp and the aircraft start moving forward for takeoff. So I hold the switch because I don't have a headset. I unplug my headset. I cannot talk to the second loadmaster. So I flip the switch to raise the flam, the ramp up. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Slowly and raise the second loadmaster too. And I point to the switch and tell him to hold the switch and close the ramp. Then I run and take off to the cockpit. I put my seatbelt on, raise the gear flap because our crap already took off.
And so now you've got everybody on board. Where did you go?
Well, after that, I told my friend, I turned on the Doppler right away and say, mm-hmm. we, from Saigon to here, we fly at 6,000 feet. From now on, we will fly top the tree until we get, because we fly toward the southwest, we have to fly over Vung Tau City.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then after that, we on the ocean, and we drop to the sea level and fly whatever the Doppler is set. Mm-hmm. I fly to that direction like 120 degree above 1 or 45 minutes or something.
You had already unplugged and or turned off all the radios and everything, so no one could track you, right?
Well, I turned off when I took off from Saigon.
Mm-hmm.
After I asked that Saigon Tower request takeoff instruction, he said, "Okay, Hakeem, 460, you're clear for takeoff." The minute the gear up, I turn off all the radio. Plus the transponder.
Wow.
And during that time, a friend of mine wanted to fly fast. I said, no, you better fly very, very slow for me because they will think that the helicopter something. Because if we fly like 180 or 200 knots, they know us, the C-130 or
right.
some aircraft. So you better fly like 120, 150 for me. Go slow. Because if we go slow, I fool the radar on the ground, and I will have time for my people to show up at Longtan Airport. You get that?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Okay. So after aircraft check up, we've flown 45 minutes sea level, and then we turn a little southwest, fly for another hour. And I look in my chart, I saw we in the international airspace and water, so I told my friend to go up to 15,000 miles and we fly straight to Singapore. Now, when I told you we go fly sea level,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, after fly about 45 minutes, I did took off, go back to the back of the aircraft to visit my family, and I don't know how many, because my friend, my brother at home arrangement for people to escape the same group, and I don't know how many. I know after I landed in Singapore, and I counted 56 total plus four flight crew,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I told you sea level because on the front aircraft I fly very low. So when I go back to the aircraft, I couldn't see nobody. Because you know why?
Why?
The aircraft flies so low. The moisture go inside the air conditioning couldn't fill enough. So of the fogging, it fogged the whole cabin, cargo cabin to the rear. So my wife sit in this side, cannot see his parents sit the other side of the aisle.
Oh.
I had the hard time to walk around to, you know, like the blind and go around to see who and went until I saw my wife with the baby. Then I saw, oh, she is here, you know. And that's it. It's how low we fly. And I told you not, this is, I don't make it up. If there's a crap, the window, people can put the hand out. They can touch the water.
Oh my, that's low.
Yeah, yeah.
that is low. That is low.
Because we fly low and the we call the ground effect, the air
mm-hmm.
effect.
Right.
So the aircraft above the sea level. And that day the sea was so calm, that glass, you know, we fly mm-hmm. very straight and very smooth. Until an hour and a half later, we go 15,000 miles and we reach 15,000 feet until we reach Singapore. And I call for request landing instruction. This is funny thing when I call. I say, Singapore Tower, this is Hockey 460 request landing instruction. We are in the northeast about 50 miles. I call Singapore Tower exactly. I call Saigon Tower or Da Nang Tower during I fly for the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I call the same thing. And Singapore Tower said, Hockey 460, you clear for land runway 02 mm-hmm. right. Wind sudden set and altitude is setting. I say, okay. Now report Darwin. I go Darwin, report to them and report final and landing 02. That's what I do. And then after I land Singapore and go to ground, and ground said, Hockey 46, you land, you text the runway Alpha Charlie and go right and turn left and park to the parking 4C over there. You see it? I say, yes, I saw it. So we part in. Now it's 43 year. I still don't have the answer. When I land in Singapore, you know,
right.
I saw two person on the ground. The ground crew. And I saw a yellow MD-3. It's the Air Force of ground power supply for C-130 or mm-hmm. any other military aircraft, MD-3, the yellow, paint yellow. That's only Air Force use that for electric. And then the guy let aircraft stop, and then he pulled the power cord on that MD-3, go to the right side where I sit, open the power door and plug that electrical power cord to the C-130. It's exactly what all the crew member in Vietnam done anytime the aircraft parking.
Mm-hmm. So they welcomed you.
How do they know this is C-130? And how do they know we need the power? Because the C-130 civilian power supply different than the one Israel Air Force, mm-hmm. you know? How do they know we are C-130 and they know exactly where the power supply came from? The outlet from the air, the inlet from the C-130, and he plucked the power in my aircraft, and we have electrical power in the C-130. So we can shut down the four engine, and we have a light inside the aircraft.
So what happened once you got to, I have to rush you along here. I don't mean to do that, but I've got to get to your arrival in the United States. How did you get here?
Okay, after we stay in Singapore for 21 days because we illegal entering the country, they didn't charge us anything, but they keep us away from all the media, mm-hmm. After 21st one day we stay in jail in Singapore. No, not jail, not, they just separate, they treat us real well, and you know, and then the American government was take off from Singapore to another island, stay there 1 week, and then come back to the refugee camp in Guam.
Okay.
And then we mix with all the refugee in Guam, and after that we travel to U.S. I was go to the refugee camp in Camp Pendleton.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, they spread it out all over the country, and my initial was sponsored by the church in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
We stayed there for maybe 3 months. And my in-law was sponsored by another church in Dayton, Ohio.
Oh,
and my wife was only one daughter they have. So 3 months later, we joined them in Dayton, Ohio, January 75. 76, yes. Journey 76 to this day, I settled in Dayton, Ohio.
So in a short version, what do you think about what the American government did or what the Americans did to help you get out and what your life has been like since you've been here?
I think the government did trust us well for everybody, all the refugees from Southeast Asia, the Thai were treated well, and we have opportunity to succeed. So all my kids go to college, and mm-hmm. I become the airline pilot for last 20 years until I retire. And I think this country treat us real well, and I own this country. I own all the vets who fight for the freedom in Vietnam during my time. And this time, I don't know how much I own them and appreciate them for service. And, I just want to say to thank them and thank the American government me here. And I have a chance to succeed in my life. And all my kids, three children, succeed in their life, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Pham, for being on Veterans Radio, and I want to remind all of our veterans out there that did serve in Vietnam that this is just one family that appreciates everything that you did while you were in Vietnam, and as a result, I wish that all of you could meet the entire family. It's a great group of people, and I'm hoping I can have you, and maybe I can get Philip on here to talk about the next generation at some time in the future, but I appreciate your being on the program today, sir.
Yeah, thank you. My pleasure. Thank you very much for letting me have my voice in your radio.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah.
We're going to take a real quick break here for our Medal of Honor, and then we're going to come back with Dave Gray. So you're listening to Veterans Radio.
Can you see?
Our next guest on Veterans Radio is the voice that you just heard, and that's Dave Bray. And Dave, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate you, and I appreciate the opportunity to listen to the brave story that we just were regaled with. It was pretty amazing, so thank you for that.
Oh, well, thank you for your patience. I didn't want to stop him. It was just he was so excited to tell his story, and it's very powerful. But anyway, so we are talking now with Dave Bray, and he is a United States Navy veteran, served in the Navy from I don't know what years you were there, but how long were you in the Navy?
So I was actually ended up crossing over. I was at an 8404 corpsman, so I was a devil doc out of Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, State Platoon 22 for a couple years, and then I also did a little blue side time as well. But I sort of got to be in two branches for the price of one. It was during the years 93 to 98.
Okay, and then you decided, or you took up music. How long have you been interested in, have you been a musician?
So, professionally, I've been a musician for the last 7 years. I just released my brand new album. It's called Music on a Mission. It's very related to the veteran community because I sing about things that we all have either encountered as veterans or as military servicemen. A lot of it is about service and respect to this country, and then a lot of it is also about the patriotic element and the continuation of service, and that's what I feel is the most important part about the mission, getting it out there, getting it in the hands of veterans, giving them hope, giving them inspiration.
Well, I was hoping to play more of your music today. We may have to have you back on again to
sure.
play more of it. But let's talk about you start off talking about respect. And what is your definition of that and how it regards today's political world out there?
Well, I feel like respect is a virtue. It's one that's taught just like every other virtue we have, in this country or wherever you are in your own family unit. And respect was one of those things that was taught in the home. And now it's being kicked down the can of respect is being kicked to our teachers or to our coaches or to other people. But the genuine form of respect came from the home. It came from the adults, came from the parents. And if you can't teach respect in your home, in your own personal home, and if we can't teach respect to the next generation, you can't teach really any of the other forms of virtue. You can't teach a patriot. You can't teach patriotic, you can't teach patriotism,
right.
I should say, without being able to teach respect. Respect is like the Second Amendment or the First Amendment. Without it, you can't really continue building upon the foundation. So the respect is the foundation of this country if we really want to get down to it. And I think it's important, again, to start out with patriotism and respect, and that's what Music on a Mission starts out with, and as well as the Star-Spangled Banner, which you just heard just a few seconds ago, part of it anyway.
Right, yeah. As I mentioned when we came on the air today, Dave, that we played the national anthem, or your a cappella version, at the end of our program last week, and we got such a great response. People wanted to know, where did this come from? Who's this guy? What is on? And I said, well, you got to tune in next week to hear more about it. But I think that the music is just wonderful, and of course your message is so important, and I think it's so needed in today's world. And I was going to ask you if there are a particular song that you would like us to play today.
Well, I think as the veteran community, it sort of overlaps with our law enforcement community, and I feel like a lot of people in this country look upon our law enforcement differently than they look upon our veterans or our military. I still feel like today that we are at war in this nation. If you look at the numbers of casualties of men serving on the line of duty who have lost their lives,
right?
The police departments across this country far outnumber any war zone of any branch of service out there. Every year it's 200 to 300 police officers we lose in this country, and we're losing, 30, 40, 50 military guys on an average every year since the war started. Anyway, long story short is I would like you to play the song Last Call, and I want you to think about this song. The words are basically from a fallen law enforcement officer giving his last request to his wife and his kids, to his brothers and sisters in arms that he serves with. And, I think it's important that we all, as veterans, sort of take the side of law enforcement. Or else we're going to be dealing with the same crap that every other country is dealing with out there right now, the civil unrest. And it's slowly starting to creep into this nation. We're seeing more and more of it with the protests and the constant fueled anger of the political resentment from both sides is just, it's coming to a head. And our law enforcement, unfortunately, is caught in the middle. So I would like for every veteran out there to take a moment, stop and think about the places they've served or where they've been overseas or whether it's a war zone or any other country that they've seen. If you don't want what is happening there to come here, whether it be terrorism or the civil unrest or the Sharia law or whatever it is, moving into this country slowly but surely encroaching upon our Constitution. If you don't want to see that, then we need to start standing behind our law enforcement in a big, big way. Or else we're going to be dealing with that civil unrest. We're going to be dealing with more of that terrorism, which we've already seen after 9/11 and numerous other places, Boston, the mass shootings in everywhere that we're seeing them in Florida. Also in, you know, we had Vegas. As far as I'm concerned, that's all terrorist behavior. So we need to stand behind our law enforcement. And that's one of my rallying cries in Music on a Mission, which is my storyteller album. I hope that everyone will go to DaveBrayUSA.com and check out some of those videos, or just go to my Facebook page, Dave Bray USA. I just did my video for Amazing Grace that's up there as well. So feel free to play Last Call for your audience. I'd love for them to hear that.
We are gonna play Last Call, and this is a very powerful song for me because my brother-in-law is a policeman. Another woman that I know is a dispatcher, and she is, you know, and what the tradition is that the dispatcher calls the name of the downed officer, and of course no one answers, and it's mind-blowing to me. But so here's Last Call by Dave Bray. Last Call. It's not all of it, but so you've got to go to Dave Bray USA to purchase the entire a CD that goes along with it. Dave, that song just tears up my heart, like I'm sure it did a lot of people that were listening to it. And your message, in addition to the respect and obviously your patriotism, is just to live a good, clean life.
Well, I get back to a lot of it in the album I talk about. Mm-hmm. This is the first ever narrated album. Nobody that I know of has ever done a concept record that is narrated the entire way through. It listens like a movie. But the idea behind this thing is patriotism, respect, teaching the next generation, and giving them the tools so that they know what these things are. Like, if we have these youngsters that are growing up in a generation that are fed by social media and the media that is existing today, then they don't stand a chance. Music on a Mission is the tool that the next generation needs so that they know that there are those of us out here that truly do care about them, mm-hmm. the future and the world and the nation that we leave behind. Too many men and women have died for the freedoms in this nation for us to just turn our backs on a generation to hand it over. It's like handing the torch over to a 3-year-old with, sitting on a barrel of gasoline and waiting to see what happens. I can't express enough how important it is to make sure that the next generation is informed, making sure that they are educated, and educated the way that they need to be educated, not improperly guided through the system that is being delivered to them through public education and the universities.
Well, I think with music like yours, and this is a great CD, folks, and it does a commentary, is very powerful, and I strongly encourage you to go out and purchase this, and you can get it at Dave Bray USA, Dave, Bray, USA.com. You can purchase it there, you can get it on iTunes, you can get it in a lot of different places, and we're going to go out on the national anthem one more time today, and I want to thank you, Dave, for being on Veterans Radio, and as I said, we'll get back to you and have you on so we can listen to some of your other music, okay?
I truly appreciate that. And for anybody that mentions Veterans Radio, if they decide to purchase the CD at DaveBrayUSA.com right now, if they purchase the CD, autographed CD, I will send you 2 autographed CDs for the price of 1. Just in the comments mention, heard you on Veterans Radio, and that's all you need to do, and you'll get 2 for 1. I can't thank you enough for having me on. God bless you, sir, and keep the mission going. Keep doing what you do, because it's just as important.
Thank you very much, Dave, and we will be doing that. Thank you all very much for listening to Veterans Radio. We're going to go out on Dave's version of the national anthem. Until next week, you are dismissed.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, hailed the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in.